Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel. City of Marfa to increase garbage collection fees, assess employee overtime. By Mary Cantrell. MKCANTRELL at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa. In recent city budget workshops, Marfa City Council voted to increase residential and commercial garbage collection rates by an average of 39%, give a 3% cost of living raise to all, not just salaried employees, and assess overtime expenses for the Public Works Department. The large hike in garbage fees is due to the fact that the city's monthly bill from solid waste company Republic Services is also going up 39%, from around $51,000 to $72,000 a month. After 5 years with the same rates, the city recently renewed its contract with Republic after it provided the lowest bid compared to Texas Disposal Systems. Council members agreed the significant increase wasn't ideal, but their hands were tied. We cannot absorb all the costs. There's no way that we can leave everyone's monthly cost the same and face this increase. We don't have the funds to, said City Manager Mandy Roan. For regular residential customers within city limits, which make up the city's largest customer base with 935 accounts, the monthly garbage collection fee will increase from $34.54 to $48, an additional $14 a month. Shared commercial rates within city limits will increase from $78.48 to $109 a month. Short-term rentals, STRs, are required to pay commercial garbage fees per city policy. According to City Secretary Kelly Perez, there are currently around 204 registered STR units in the city. Residential customers outside city limits will now be charged $64.93 a month for garbage collection, while shared commercial customers outside of city limits will be charged $147 a month. Increased rates will also apply to medium and large commercial accounts, both inside and outside of city limits, as well as roll-off dumpsters stationed at the landfill, which the city pays for at no cost to citizens. The new monthly fees are planned to go into effect in October. The city will first need to pass an ordinance detailing new garbage collection rates, which will likely include a 4.5% annual increase in order to keep up with the costs of providing the services. Earlier on in the budgeting process, the Recycling and Solid Waste Fund was only netting around $84,000, which Mayor Manny Baeza remarked was low for an enterprise fund, or fund that helps the city make money, in order to pay for non-revenue-generating departments like the library, nutrition center, and more. But with the increased rates, the city was profiting closer to $285,000. The additional revenue, in part, helps offset a 3% cost of living raise for all city employees as well as other expenses. While it was originally planned to only apply to full-time staff, Councilmember Eddie Payaras pushed for part-timers to be included as well. Our part-time employees are just as important as our full-time employees, said Payaras. Just a small increase, because it sounds like we have some solid part-timers. Those who have been employed with the city for at least a year will get the raise in October, and those who have been there less than a year will receive the bump on their one-year anniversary, explained Roan. That will give a 3% raise to everyone employed by the city, full-time, part-time, salary, hourly. Our employees will appreciate that, so I appreciate y'all working to make that happen, said Roan. The city also budgeted $20,000 to create administrative file storage in the EMS garage in order to balance the budget. The question of overtime hours performed by the Public Works Department was also discussed in a recent budget meeting. Council member Mark Morrison said annual overtime hours accumulated around 769 for Public Utilities Supervisor Chuck Salgado seemed high. In a follow-up call with the Big Bend Sentinel, Morrison clarified that another Public Works employee performed around 300 hours of overtime, and those hours were significant compared to other city departments, like streets and gas, which also work overtime. The overtime for Salgado and the other employee cost the city around $58,000 last year, and Morrison, as well as Councilmember Mark Cash and Mayor Pro Tem Raul Lara, wondered if it was an efficient use of city funds. In an interview with the Big Bend Sentinel, Salgado, who was unable to attend the city council budget meeting due to the new water tank being delivered, said the overtime was needed to keep the local water utilities functioning. I understand our department does have a lot more overtime, but we're probably the busiest department there is in the city. We work weekends, we work holidays, said Salgado. The infrastructure of the town is aging. We've got water leaks. We've got sewer backups. Things come up. Overtime performed in order to address power surges, which routinely occur when wells kick on, causing other wells' breakers to trip, according to Salgado, came under scrutiny in the meeting. Roan explained that, per the city employee handbook, Public Works employees received 2 hours of overtime for each of those incidents that happened after hours. Council members were under the impression the fix could be made remotely via a cell phone, requiring no field work, making the policy seem like excessive compensation. Salgado said the process to address the power surges does begin on employees' cell phones, but it also requires them to physically go in to reset pumps. He estimated the power surges occur 4 to 5 times a week and did not make up the majority of overtime hours. Council members asked whether it would be more cost-effective to get a new system at that rate as opposed to paying for constant overtime needed to address the power surges. Salgado claimed the software the department uses is just perfect, and he had no complaints. Morrison explained that the intent isn't to undercut people's wages, but if they were relying on overtime for a large portion, 40 to 50% of their pay, perhaps the city should consider paying a more competitive salary. Roan agreed to look into the records of the power surges, review the employee manual, and assess salary structures for department heads being paid hourly rather than a salary, of which there were 4, including Salgado, within the city. In the meantime, the city budgeted as usual for the overtime costs, with Roan stating they could always amend the budget later on in the year if they decided to restructure employee pay for certain departments. In addition to the COLA raises and new garbage rates, the city notably budgeted $2.1 million for street repair, a carryover from the previous year. A public hearing on the proposed budget will take place at 6 p.m. September 25th at City Hall. Citizens had an opportunity to comment on the new tax rate, $0.323 per $100 taxable value, a slight decrease from the previous year, Tuesday night, and the city will officially adopt the rate later this month when it adopts the budget, a process referred to as the Texas Two-Step.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, September 21st, 2023. Fort Stockton Holdings discusses Edwards Trinity Aquifer. Several opinion pieces have been published in the Pioneer questioning the health and well-being of the Edwards Trinity Aquifer in the Fort Stockton area. This is an incredible resource which recharges annually and has long supplied drinking water to Fort Stockton, irrigation for local farmers, and periodic winter flows to Comanche Springs. In a recent opinion piece, Belding Farms suggested that this aquifer is in danger due to potential overpumping and the failure of the Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District to do its job. Rather than relying on available science, the following statement was offered in support of such claim. One of the best gauges of the health of the Trinity Aquifer is Comanche Springs, and that they are ailing. It should be noticed that the above statement was made following this winter's flow, which was greater and lasted longer than has been seen since the turn of the century. It is important to remember that the Comanche Springs quit flowing regularly during the drought in the 50s. Only in the past 10 years have the springs flowed temporarily during the winter months, following the harvest of fall crops. Actual science and practical observations tell a different story about the aquifer. Even during the historic drought of the 50s, the aquifer has provided an established, sustainable, and dependable source of water to area farmers and the city of Fort Stockton. In recorded history, the aquifer has never failed to recharge, including the 50s drought, the droughts of 2011, 2015, and the current one. Belding Farms and the City of Fort Stockton and FSH have never reduced nor quit pumping due to the aquifer levels. MPGCD continuously monitors aquifer data and retains hydrologists to evaluate and report on the aquifer. This science supports the continued viability and reliability of the aquifer. We invite you to view the website to learn more about its efforts. MiddlePecosGCD.org/Fort Stockton Holdings. Fort Stockton Holdings LP has spent millions of dollars on two comprehensive detailed studies of the aquifer and developed a groundwater flow model which is used by the MPGCD and is participating in a joint groundwater study of the aquifer. This study includes contribution of $250,000 to MPGCD for the study and providing an existing well for monitoring, as well as an agreement to drill another monitor well for the MPGCD. Export of water is never popular, so it is understandable that the sale of water to Midland, Abilene, and San Angelo might cause some concerns for those not familiar with the facts. Unlike many municipal water sales, the water dedicated for export to the cities is that portion of water released from an existing permit held by FSH. No additional water has been permitted for the cities. The exported water is the result of a change in the beneficial use of the permitted water from agricultural to municipal. Making the water available to the cities does not increase the pumping impacts on the aquifer or other local permit holders. To approve the export and protect the aquifer, MPGCD imposed the most stringent conditions, including curtailment thresholds, on the FSH permit it has ever issued. A recent published opinion erroneously claimed the conditions and thresholds imposed by MPGCD are sufficient to protect the aquifer. Without citing any data or credible study to support the claim, the opinion alleged the city's pattern of use, not the volume of water permitted to be pumped by the cities, will harm the aquifer. Fort Stockton pumps water year-round without any demonstrable adverse impact on the aquifer. The recommendation in the opinion to impose additional administrative restrictions on private property rights based solely upon groundless fears is a dangerous precedent. the facts and science and documented flows from Comanche Springs in recent years all refute the unsubstantiated assertions in the opinions. The same facts, science, and observations demonstrate that the criticisms of MPCGCD have no merit. They complied with our laws, providing both protections to the aquifer and landowners with access to it when it issued the FSH permit that facilitated the free and lawful movement of water to the cities. A 58-year-old Alpine man was killed September 14th when a vehicle he was driving ran off the road on Farm to Market 1776, 1 mile north of Interstate 10 in Pecos County. The accident took place at approximately 7 o'clock when Jason Keith Richardson, 58, of Alpine, was driving his 1995 Honda Accord southbound on 1776 at what troopers describe as an unsafe speed when he failed to negotiate a curve in the roadway. The vehicle veered off the highway into the East Barrow Ditch, overcorrected, and rolled over. The driver was ejected and pronounced deceased at the scene by Justice of the Peace Mitchell. The accident was investigated by Trooper Joshua Garcia of the Texas Highway Patrol. McDonald Observatory staff will participate in annular solar eclipse activities at Blakemore Planetarium in Midland and provide free eclipse viewers to all participants. Beginning at 10:18 a.m., the eclipse will peak around 11:45 and end by 1:21 p.m. The event will include talks by the retired NASA astronaut John Harrington and kid-friendly activities provided by the McDonald Observatory, New Minds in Richmond, and Texas Tech's Department of Physics and Astronomy. Presented by Chevron, all eclipse activities and talks will be free. Learn more and RSVP at the Museum of the Southwest website, museumsw.org. Although only a partial solar eclipse will be visible in Fort Davis, McDonald Observatory is also hosting eclipse activities at its Frank N. Bash Visitor Center. Learn more at the McDonald Observatory website, mcdonaldobservatory.org/eclipse. Your guide to local places to go and things to do. First and third Tuesday, Fort Stockton Masonic Lodge 1022 meets the first and third Tuesday of each month, 7:30 p.m., 602 North Water Street. September 21st, homecoming parade from Rio Street to the high school at 6:30. September 22nd, Fort Stockton Panthers varsity football versus Isleta, 7 p.m. Panther Stadium. September 22nd, Pecos County 4-H tailgate, Panther Stadium, 5 p.m. September 23rd, Fort Stockton Prowlers varsity volleyball versus Greenwood, new at the Bill and Virginia Williams Special Events Center. September 23, Stockton Market at Zero Stone Park, 12 to 4 p.m. September 23rd, Comanche Springs Marching Festival, Panther Stadium, 2 p.m. September 30th, Fort Stockton Prowlers Varsity Volleyball versus Seminole, noon at the Bill and Virginia Williams Special Events Center. October 20th, Fort Stockton Panthers Varsity Football versus Mountain View, 7 p.m., Panther Stadium. October 20th, 21st, Living Historic Days at Historic Fort Stockton, featuring Buffalo Soldiers, Camels, Spinners, Cavalry, Jumano Nation, Lipan Apache, 19th Century Games, and more. October 20th is for the students of the Trans-Pecos, and October 21st is the public from 9 to 4 p.m. October 27th to 29th, Horsehead Crossings Living History Event, Spirits of the River on Farm Road 11, 12 miles northwest of Girvan. For more information, contact Betty Dameron, 86, at yahoo.com or DelaneCC@gmail.com. November 3rd, Fort Stockton Panthers Varsity Football Senior Night versus Fabens, 7 p.m. Panther Stadium. The annual Gifted and Talented Parent Community Meeting will be on Wednesday, September 27th. The meeting will be at the Alamo Elementary Cafeteria from 5:30 to 6 p.m. This meeting is to inform FSISD parents and community members of the Gifted and Talented program offered by the district. Dear Editor, What do Al Sharpton, Jesse Jackson, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, James Comey, Merrick Garland, Justices Kagan, Sotomayor, and Jackson, LeBron James, plus most of the mainstream TV commentators, all have in common? They have all come out of our secular, humanist, dumbed-down, anti-Christian, anti-Bible, anti-God public education school system. There are good, noble people in our public school system, but they must be careful to walk a thin, tight line if they want to retain their employment. 50% of public school graduates entering community colleges have to restudy math and reading. There are 74 million elementary and middle school students in the USA who cannot read at grade level. Trump correctly said he would abolish the Education Department if elected. Public schools try to develop the minds and bodies of the students, but omit the most important, the soul. As a result, I believe we are graduating millions and millions of clever, muscled-up devils who have rejected God, the Bible, absolutes, and the Judeo-Christian ethic. The public education school system, I believe, is destroying our community and will eventually lead to communism. Signed, George Pitts. Dear Editor, recently, an organization of 1,609 climate scientists and professionals signed off on an agreement that the so-called climate change, climate emergency was nothing more than a fictional ploy designed by corrupt scientists, politicians, and businessmen for the acquisition of political power and undeserved financial gain. You don't hear much about that on mainstream media, do you? What this means is we all need to stop believing corrupt politicians, scientists, businessmen, and their mainstream media servants. We all need to begin doing our own personal research on this matter, if you haven't already. The truth is out there, you only need to look for it. Always remember, awake is always much better than woke. Signed, James R. LeBlanc.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahan's News for Thursday, September 14th. School board tries to walk around open meetings and Crown Act. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Communications sent by Monahan's Wicked Pyote Independent School District, MWPISD, Superintendent of Schools Chad Smith, have raised concerns that he and school board members have violated Texas open meetings laws by deliberately holding secret meetings regarding the district's policy on hair. According to anonymous sources, Smith advised the board members via text messaging that more than one meeting was necessary, with only three members present at each meeting, so as to avoid creating a quorum. Allegedly, he also said members could not discuss what was talked about in the meetings after leaving the meetings because it could constitute a walking quorum. Texas Government Code Section 551.143 states, "A walking quorum is when members engage in communications separately that, when taken together, would constitute a quorum." Having a quorum of members present invokes the requirements of the Texas Open Meetings Act. The Act requires all meetings of governmental bodies be open to the public when discussing the public's business. The news became aware of the alleged illegal meetings after a phone call to the news's office on August 23rd. The Texas Attorney General's Open Meetings Act handbook states, quote, "Amended Section 551.143 now prohibits discussion about an item of public business among a quorum of a governmental body through a series of communications," end quote. The new amendment became law in 2019. MWPISD School Board is comprised of seven voting members, Raymond Reyes, Donna Garcia, Bobby Almanza, Nancy Upchurch, Josh Schwarb, Steve Fine, and Steve Tuxhorn, and a quorum consists of 4 members. Sources stated the meetings were held at 10 a.m. and after lunch on August 22nd in the MWP ISD administration office with school principals of Monahans High School, Parkway Elementary, Tatum Elementary, and Superintendent Smith, all in attendance at both meetings. Also allegedly in attendance at the first meeting were board members Almanza, Garcia, and Tuxhorn. Members present for the second meeting were reportedly Fine, Reyes, and Upchurch. Schwab was not present for either meeting, and the topic of discussion in both meetings was the Crown Act and, quote, how the district's hair policy was against the law, end quote. The Crown Act went into effect on September 1st and makes it illegal to adopt or enforce a dress or grooming policy that discriminates on the basis of someone's hair texture or protective hairstyle commonly or historically associated with race. During the July school board meeting, board members voted not to change the current district hair policy and keep it the same as it has been in previous years, after Smith told the board during the meeting, quote, the Crown Act does not affect our local policy. They can wear their hair in any style, braids, locks, doesn't matter, as long as the hair does not extend past the collar of a T-shirt, end quote. The MWP ISD Handbook Local Policy on Hair states, hair, facial hair, hair must be neat and clean. There are to be no head or hair ornamentation, such as unusual hair coloring, mohawks, faux hawks, man buns, rat tails, initials, numbers, symbols, scalp designs, rollers, or hairnets. Hair coloring must be of a natural hair color and cause no distraction. Boys' hair must be cut so as to not touch the eyebrows in front or extend beyond the top of the collar of a standard T-shirt. Additionally, boys' hair may not exceed the top of the ear, and boys are not allowed to wear hair in a ponytail. Beards and mustaches are not allowed. Face mask covering is prohibited to cover facial hair. Sideburns may not extend below the earlobe in length and beyond the outer edge of the eyebrow in width. Designs cut into the eyebrows will not be permitted. Sources also stated during the discussions, one of the board members laughed and cursed, saying, quote, Monahans is conservative and we don't want folks looking like damn hoodlums. Let them sue us. They don't have enough money anyway, end quote. The news has also learned, via reports and implication, the school board supposedly discussed the hair and dress code during an executive session portion of the regular scheduled board meeting on Monday, August 28th. If so, this was also a violation of open meetings requirements, as any item discussed, even in a closed session, must be on the group's published agenda, and any action taken still must take place after the group reconvenes in open session. Sources said, quote, after executive session on Monday night, school administrators were told to enforce the policy, end quote. Quote, it sure sounds like a walking quorum to me, Joe Larson, a First Amendment attorney in Houston and a member of the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, FOIFT, told the news. The news is attempting to get copies of the text messages and email, private or district issued, regarding the meetings through a public information request, but as of press time, have yet to receive them. By law, the district can submit a request to the state attorney general within 10 days of receiving a public information request, but only if it believes what is requested is not subject to open records requests. Bill Aylshire, with Aylshire Law PC in Austin, and also a member of the FOIFT, told the news, quote, "I can't see there would be any exceptions that would apply to the requested communications," end quote. According to the Texas Public Information Act, the only exceptions to the act is information such as personnel records, pending litigation, competitive bids, trade secrets, real estate deals, and certain legal matters involving attorney-client privilege. The open records request was hand-delivered to the school administration office on August 30th. Quote, "There is also a criminal provision in the Public Information Act stating withholding public information is a crime," Aylshire said. According to the Texas Attorney General, the district must notify the requester when the information will be released. If requested information is withheld, then the government must request a ruling from the Office of the Attorney General. He added that the series of meetings held by the MWP-ISD School Board was a clear violation of the Open Meetings Act. Quote, "One of the things in the amended section regarding a walk-in quorum is you have to be able to prove they had knowledge they were violating the law, and in this case, the superintendent telling board members two meetings were necessary, with only three members present at each, gives them, his bosses, that knowledge," end quote. The news sent an email to Smith on Monday, September 11th, asking for a status on the open records request, and Smith replied Tuesday saying, quote, "Upon my return back to town, I will get the correspondence to you. I will have it to you by Thursday evening," end quote. In phone calls to board members Steve Fine, Steve Tuxhorn, Donna Garcia, and Nancy Upchurch, all confirmed they were present for one of the two meetings held, but said they were not aware by holding the two meetings in that manner was a violation of the Open Meetings Act. Quote, "That's news to me. I hope it wasn't a violation," Tuxhorn said in a phone call Wednesday morning. Upchurch told the news she wasn't aware it violated the Open Meetings Act either, but when asked to attend the meeting, she suggested to Smith, quote, "Putting the hair code on the agenda and having the principal sign up to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting," end quote. She added, Smith told her, quote, "It doesn't violate the law as long as board members don't discuss it amongst themselves away from a board meeting. We will have to be careful not to do that," end quote. Garcia said, quote, "We were invited to attend the weekly principals meeting. There wasn't a quorum. I don't remember who asked us to come. It may have been Chad," end quote. When asked what was discussed during the meeting, Garcia said, quote, "The principals were just wanting to talk about concerns they were having with the hair code and input on the Crown Act. No decisions were made at the meeting. I don't know what they expected us to do," end quote. Calls to Raymond Reyes and Josh Schwab were unanswered as of press time. A phone number for member Bobby Almanza was not available to the news. The Monahans News publisher, Smokey Briggs, said that while the news's usual policy was not to use anonymous sources, that in some cases there is no other choice. Quote, "When issues involving taxpayer money and the legality of an elected official's conduct are at hand, I think the value to our readers and to our society outweighs the concerns associated with using an anonymous source. In this case, we have credible information, but revealing the sources would open them up to retaliation. In this instance, if these meetings took place, and I would feel comfortable taking the evidence we have to court, than the public needs to know about them. The provisions of Texas's Freedom of Information laws are a cornerstone of our system, not just some pesky suggestion to be rushed aside when convenient, as though the results can justify the means. To my way of thinking, violating open meeting requirements is no different than lying, in essence, lying to your boss. In my business, if I catch someone lying, I fire them, but that's just me. Elected officials are the people's employees. Too often, elected officials get this idea in their head that they are special, that somehow the people who elected them are not their boss. End quote. Monahans receives a smidgen of rain. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. The first fall cold front of the season blew in on Monday night, bringing high winds, dust, and a small amount of rain. The front lowered overnight temperatures to the mid-60s and held Tuesday's high temperature to a welcome mid-70s. Quote, "We got just a trace out here at Midland International Airport," National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration forecaster Douglas Kane said. Monahans received 2 to 3 tenths of an inch in some areas of town. Monahans has to depend on individual reports of rain amounts due to a lack of sanctioned National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration weather station. Quote, "We have various percentages of rain through the weekend, with temperatures in the upper 80s and mid to upper 90s, Kane said. Most of the rainfall was east and southeast of Ward County and brought Big Spring 1.85 inches, Andrews 1.47 inches, Colorado City had 1.26 inches, Big Lake measured 1.63, and McKamey received 1.61 inches. Closer in to the Monahans area, Wink reported a trace of rain with winds clocked at 68 miles per hour at the Wink Airport. Wind 10 miles west-northwest of Pyote was reported clocked at 65 miles per hour. Pecos received 2/100ths of an inch of rain with strong winds and dust, and Fort Stockton reported zero rain. Winds were a factor in several different areas of West Texas, with reports of a utility tower blown down at Big Spring, a fence was blown down at Forsan, and 2 miles east of Lorain on Interstate 20, a semi-tractor trailer was blown over on its side. Event Center Park officially opens. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. A grand opening and ribbon-cutting celebration was held on Monday, September 11th, for the newly opened Ward County Event Center Park, located directly north of the Event Center. Ward County Judge Greg Holly opened up the event with prayer and then said, quote, "We are so excited to finally be at this point. This park is something we have planned and hoped for a number of years. We were able to build this park without accruing any debt, and are grateful we were able to provide this to the community, which features opportunities you won't see in a lot of places," end quote. The development of the park was a joint effort by Ward County, Monahans Economic Development Corporation, and the city, with each paying a portion of the infrastructure cost, such as sewer and water lines, electric lines. KDC Associates were hired as the architectural firm. The four-acre park encompasses a splash pad, a sand volleyball area, a basketball court, covered tables, a fenced dog park, an artificial grass putting green. A large covered play area shades the playground equipment, approximately 1 mile of walking sidewalks and night lighting. Construction began early this year and wrapped up toward the end of July. Cost of building the park was just over $3 million. Holly told the crowd Ward County Commissioner Eddie Nelms and his crew will be in charge of taking care of the grass at the new park. Quote, Eddie and his guys do a great job with the ballparks and the event center, and I know they will do a great job here, too, Holly said. MHS choir members were in attendance at the Monday evening ribbon cutting and performed an a cappella version of the Star Spangled Banner for the crowd. Along with the grand opening celebration was a tribute to our local first responders, and each one received a flag pin from a Monahans ambassador. Kids of all ages were able to play in the splash pad, play sand volleyball, basketball, on the putting green, in the party jumpers, or in the covered play area. Tapatios y Mas, Reelin and Grillin, Franco Brothers Meat, and Coco's Mangonadas y Mas were all on hand for the event, offering a variety of food. Family wants rural county road closed. Commissioners say no, lower speeds. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Juliet Beebe, a Ward County resident, addressed the Commissioners' Court Monday during the meeting, asking the commissioners what they could do to help with trucks speeding on the unpaved County Road 148, which runs in front of her house. Quote, I have kids and animals living out there who are near or crossing the road at any given time of the day. The water haulers speed through there in a cloud of dust. A truck with Royal on the side sped through there and killed one of our dogs right in front of the kids, Beebe told the court. Beebe purchased 140 acres north of Barstow, Precinct 1, across from Soder Lake, between County Road 146 and County Road 149 in 2009, when the family relocated from Wisconsin. The road is a graded single-lane caliche road that runs across her property in a northwest to southeast direction. Ward County Judge Greg Holly asked Miss Beebe, quote, what would you like to have done? End quote. Beebe told Holly, quote, I am willing to try anything that will slow the trucks down. That's why I am here addressing the Commissioner's Court today. I have talked to Judge Holly on the phone, and he put me on the agenda to ask for a solution. I am worried about my kids and animals getting run over by the speeding trucks in front of my house, end quote. Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez told Beebe, quote, I can't put cattle guards out there until you fence in the area. I can put bigger signs that say residential area, 25 miles per hour, on both ends of the road in front of your house, one at the junction of 148 and 146, and one past your house, with the approval of the court. Then I can come back closer to your house and put in a speed bump that will slow them down and get them by your house slowly. Then they will have another speed bump at the end of your house area. That will kind of reduce the speed on the trucks because they don't want to hit the speed bump that hard. The speed limit out there is 55 miles per hour, so if the posted speed is 25 miles per hour and with speed bumps, it would slow the trucks down as they go by your house. End quote. Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms disagreed with Sanchez, saying, quote, I've tried speed bumps, and they are dangerous, incredibly dangerous, because people hit them so fast. You would have wrecks in front of your house, and every time a fire truck or ambulance comes through there, they are going to wreck because they forget about the speed bumps. It's a big liability to the county, end quote. Nelms continued, quote, if I am not mistaken, speed bumps have to be inspected by TxDOT and everything else. There's a lot to them, end quote. Quote, even if they're placed past the signs that say 25 miles per hour, Beebe asked. Nelms answered, quote, if it is on a public road, there are certain criteria they have to be so wide, so high, and with regular maintenance, end quote. However, according to Ward District Texas Department of Transportation Representative Chad Windham, TxDOT has no jurisdiction over County Caliche roads. Windham further explained the only involvement with TxDOT would come if safety improvement was requested through federal funding. Quote, "There hasn't been a fire truck out there in years. This is a road that is used as a shortcut across my property. There's two other roads that will get them to the same end place. It is just that County Road 148 is a direct way," Beebe said. Quote, "I agree with Mr. Nelms. We have had problems with these speed bumps before," Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols said. Beebe said, quote, "I would really like to have the road closed," end quote. Quote, "There is specific criteria that would need to happen first. You would need to get a petition signed by 8 landowners within Precinct 1. Then signs have to be posted at entry points on the road, and then the Commissioner's Court will have to consider it and vote on it," Holly said. Nelm said, quote, "It is a county road for public use, and I will not vote to close it," end quote. Sanchez said, quote, "I guess for right now, since we heard the other commissioner's opinions about these speed bumps, the only thing I can do is put up bigger signs. I have the signs already made. They are 48 inches by 48 inches and will read residential area 25 miles per hour. Maybe the sheriff's department can catch them speeding if they can be out there more," end quote. Judge Holly asked, "Sheriff Valle, can you patrol that area more?" Quote, "We could put some extra patrol out there. If y'all reduce the speed out there, then we will enforce it as often as we can get out there," Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Beebe told the court, quote, "When Julian Flores was commissioner, he put small signs out many years ago which read, 'Slow, residential area,' and it doesn't have any effect on the speed. They know no one is watching," Sanchez said. Quote, "All these trucking companies drive too fast on these roads. They know the speed limit is 55 miles per hour, but some are going 60 to 70 miles per hour. The signs I can put out are big 4-foot by 4-foot signs. They can't miss them." Holly told Sanchez, quote, "If you just want to reduce the speed, we can do that in this meeting. We only need to identify what area, meaning a certain distance from that junction, what area do you want?" Sanchez responded to Holly saying, quote, "Right now, it will be right there at the junction of 146 and 148, just past the Y, and then place the other one just past her property," end quote. Beebe said, quote, "What prompted action this time was watching a truck driver veer off the road to hit our dog, get back on the road, and continue on his way without even slowing down," end quote. Holly told Beebe, quote, "I know it is incredibly frustrating, and a lot of folks living out in the county are having problems because of the increased oil field traffic. Be sure to keep your kids out of the road," end quote. After the discussion, commissioners voted to reduce the speed limit on the road from 55 miles per hour to 25 miles per hour and allow Sanchez to put up large signs reinforcing the reduced speed. Council revises ordinance. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Monahan City Council voted to revise the ordinance regarding dangerous structures in an effort to make regulating the abandoned, unfit, or dangerous buildings and structures more efficient. City Manager Rex Thee said, quote, "We have been looking at all of our codes and have made some really good updates, and this code was needing some updates and amending so we can make taking care of properties more efficient," end quote. City Attorney Justin Till looked over the ordinance and came up with a revision which will streamline the process, he added. According to the revised ordinance, after the building inspector determines a building does not meet city code, it can then be presented to the city council instead of notices having to be sent to property owners first. Quote, "We've added a better definition of a dangerous building as a structure that does not meet the minimum standard for construction and maintenance, and according to state statute, the city building inspector can present his findings to the council for further action instead of the lengthy process it was before. Hopefully, this will produce quicker results with what we would like to see done with these dangerous structures, and it will certainly help our personnel know exactly where we are in the process and how to move forward," Thee said. In other business, the council ratified the property tax increase reflected in the new budget. Two public hearings were held to allow residents an opportunity to have input on the property tax increase. Although some residents were present for both hearings, no one addressed the council with questions or concerns. Thee made the announcement that the ad valorem tax rate will remain at 35 cents per $100 of valuation, the same as last year. Even though the tax rate is the same, an increase in property values will produce $299,000 more than last year, which means, by law, that is a tax rate increase because it garners more funds. The assessed valuation, according to the published budget, is $594 million, up from $513 million last year. The tax rate will produce an estimated tax levy of $2.07 million. In second readings, the council adopted the 2023-2024 fiscal year budget. The total available funds from all sources from the general fund and system fund were stated as $25 million. Estimated expenditures of $14.4 million is expected to leave a cash balance of $10.6 million as of September 30, 2024. In other actionable items, the council acknowledged a $6,000 donation to first responders from Eagle Claw Midstream. Thee said the donation is from their Holes for Heroes charity golf tournament, benefiting police, firefighters, and first responders. The city council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the city council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the city secretary's office located inside City Hall, or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next city council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, September 26th, in the council chambers at City Hall at 112 West 2nd Street. Recent wrecks keep officers and first responders busy. A series of accidents kept the officers of the Monahans Police Department and Ward County EMS busy late last week. Monahans Police Department Chief of Police Christopher Quintana said officers worked four crashes last Thursday and Friday, all resulting in someone being transported to the emergency room to receive medical treatment. A two-vehicle accident occurred at the intersection of Harry and 8th Streets Thursday evening. Friday saw three crashes, one around noon near Ace Hardware. Another resulted in a rollover with a teen driver after the Friday night football game, and one sent a 70-year-old to the hospital. On September 7th, around 6 p.m., Oscar Pereira, age 23, of Kermit, was traveling northbound in the 800 block of South Harry Street, while Dakota Barbie, age 29, of Monahans, was headed eastbound in the 900 block of East 8th Street. According to Quintana, Pereira disregarded the stop sign at the intersection of 8th and Harry Streets, striking Barbie's vehicle in the front right quarter panel. Barbie had two passengers at the time of the crash, Joshua Barbie, age 38, and a 9-year-old juvenile. No citations were issued, and Ward County EMS responded to the scene and transported Joshua Barbie to be treated for minor injuries. On September 8th, shortly before 1 p.m., a two-vehicle accident occurred after Marissa Sanchez, age 46 of Monahans, was driving a 2023 Hyundai Santa Fe and was attempting to back out of the Ace Hardware parking lot without safety. Quintana said, quote, "As Sanchez was backing out, she struck the driver's side rear quarter panel of a Ford passenger car driven by Peter Martinez, age 50, of El Paso, as he was traveling southbound in the 300 block of South Betty. No citations were issued and no one was transported." Around 5 p.m., also on Friday, Doris Wester, age 70, of Monahans, was driving a 2022 Jeep and was stopped at the red light facing south at the intersection of Loop 464 and Seeley Streets, while Daniel Campos, age 36, of Pecos, was stopped behind her in a 1998 Lincoln Continental. Quote, "For unknown reasons, Campos proceeded forward and hit the back bumper of Wester's Jeep." Ward County EMS responded to the scene and transported Wester to be treated for minor injuries. No citations were issued. After the Lobo victory over Big Spring Friday night, shortly after 10 p.m., a 16-year-old juvenile female of Monahans was driving a 2022 Ford Bronco eastbound on 10th Street, and while turning, the Bronco flipped over. Quintana said, quote, "While attempting to turn north on Fay, the juvenile driver appeared to have turned too sharply and hit a 2008 Pontiac Solstice driven by Donna Heflin, age 17.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.